This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. It's no secret. Go to the website for the United States Postal Service and you'll see a bright red banner across the top of the page. It reads, Alert, USPS is experiencing unprecedented volume increases and limited employee availability due to the impacts of COVID-19. We're talking about it now, just two business days before Christmas, and we're taking your emails. Email us your questions and your experiences at 800-642-ideas@WPR.org. We often take calls during this show, but our phone lines are down right now, so the best way that you can get your question asked during this segment of The Morning Show is to send that email. The address, again, is ideas@WPR.org, and we'll incorporate them as we work through this conversation. Our guest is Jacob Bogage. He's a business reporter for The Washington Post. Jacob, welcome back to the Ideas Network. And Jacob, I'm not sure that we can hear you right now. Are you able to hear me?
Yep, I hit mute with my face on the phone.
You know what? Some
it's a pleasure
days
to be with you.
Are like that. It's so good to talk with you again. Unfortunately, not a very uplifting topic we've got, because you've been reporting on the Postal Service operations. And I mean, how do you gauge it? How much pressure is the post office under right now?
It's under a ton of pressure, and it's really the combination of three things. One is, we've gotten used to shopping online for months and months and months, and we all bought our holiday gifts online, and now they are all arriving at once, and that is very overwhelming, and it's slowing things down to a crawl. The other is the coronavirus. If we told everyone, stay home and do not travel over Thanksgiving, a lot of people did anyway. We're seeing the resulting spikes, and that is hitting the Postal Service too. They've hired 50,000 seasonal temporary workers to help them work through the holiday season. But 19,000 postal workers are home either with positive tests or isolating because of the virus. That wipes out a lot of those hires. And the third, which we've talked about before, was this cost-cutting regimen by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy that went into effect earlier this summer. Parts of it have been rolled back because of some court challenges, and there's still some communication snafus, if you will, trying to sort all that out. And all those things together are making for a really difficult holiday season at the post office.
Can we blame one, or is it really the perfect storm here?
It really is the perfect storm here. When you have 19,000 workers who are at home because of the virus, on top of that, you're getting slammed with unprecedented package volume. On top of that, some of your processes have changed, and they've changed not just in the routine course of things, but because a court has told you to change them. That's going to cause tremendous disruption.
When you talk about those nearly 18,000 people who are out, the context is the American Postal Workers Union has the number that 644,000 workers have called in sick or isolating. I mean, can you put this into context for us? Because it seems like a big number, and yet the USPS is a massive system.
Yeah, it's a massive system. 644,000 workers. It's the size of a large metropolitan city. How many people live in Milwaukee? I mean, I imagine that's got to be the size of you know, a lot of large cities. So 644,000 postal workers, 19,000 of them, thereabouts, have either tested positive themselves this week or are quarantining because of a close exposure. Of course, that number goes up if you factor in regular sick leave, someone coming down with the flu or a cold or anything else. And then folks who, you know, are staying home for childcare issues, right? Because schools are closed, and they've got to be home with their kids. So this is a substantial number. Again, the Postal Service has hired 50,000 holiday temporary workers to help them work through the surge. Again, that's the size of some, you know, mid-sized cities. that doesn't mean a whole lot if you've got roughly 20,000 folks who are out. You know, it washes out a lot of those numbers. Plus, it takes time to train people and to get them used to the processes. And all of that, again, is going to lead to some significant disruption. And the net result of that is going to be, unfortunately, for a lot of folks, your holiday packages, your Christmas presents may not arrive on December 24th or 25th.
Oh, yes. And we will be talking about that. And just for context, you asked our director, Lee Rayburn, sent us this message that Milwaukee itself, the city, has about 600,000 people. So that is a pretty good representation of the USPS workforce. And there are about 1 million people in Milwaukee County. So there's a little bit of Wisconsin context for you. We're talking with Jacob Bogage, who's a business reporter for The Washington Post. And we're taking your emails. Send us an email this morning at ideas@WPR.org. Usually we take calls, but right now we're focused on emails with our systems, and that's the best way you can get your question answered. So what are you wondering about the post office and the postal service right now? Maybe you have an experience to share. Did one of your packages get lost in the mail? How would you rate the U.S. Postal Service's job performance this year, especially considering the circumstances? Email ideas@WPR.org. Let's talk more about those packages you mentioned then, Jacob. Do we know how many more packages the post office is processing this year because of the pandemic?
So we don't know exact figures, but we do know it's a net 14% increase over this time last year. That's a little bit of a misleading number. Think about earlier in the pandemic, or at least you might not think about it, but I do because I look at this data. Package volume, you know, up over the same period last year, earlier in the pandemic, was, you know, anywhere from 20% higher to 60% higher week over week. Earlier in the spring and over the summer, it's done wonders for the Postal Service's finances, which are still not great, but could have been a lot worse. When we say 14%, we have to remember this is what's called peak season at the post office. This is everyone sending their Christmas presents, everyone sending their holiday cards. They already get a lot of mail. So when we ask what is the breaking point of the Postal Service, we have found it. It is a 14% increase over what was already a historic peak season last year, plus trouble with staffing. That is the breaking point for this agency.
Has the Postal Service limited the number of packages from certain retailers?
So it really can't do that. I mean, this is the public Postal Service, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone can put anything in the mail as long as you pay the postage. One of the reasons why there is so much volume is because private express carriers, FedEx and UPS, have turned down some retail clients and said, we expect a certain level of service. We can only provide that service to our clients if we have a certain amount of volume. We can't overwhelm ourselves. We're not taking any more business from you this year. The Postal Service obviously cannot do that.
Right. We're talking about what's happening at the Postal Service during the already busy holiday season. Some workers are dealing with COVID-19. More people are buying things that need shipping, and things are piling up. Reporter Jacob Bogage stays with us. We want to hear from you. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. Don't use the phone today. Try ideas@WPR.org. Ask your question. Send us your story. Maybe you voted by mail this election. Do you know if your ballot was received on time? Did you send out holiday cards? Did they get to the right place yet, or are they stuck in transit? Ideas@WPR.org. We continue this conversation on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and our guest is a business reporter for The Washington Post, Jacob Bogage. We're taking your emails about the post office. We're wondering what you've experienced. Are you more dependent than ever on the post office? What have you relied on it for? Maybe you get your medicines through the post office, or you have been sending holiday gifts. What's your experience been like? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org today instead of giving us a call. That's the best way to get your question answered or your story on the air. You know, it hasn't been the best year for the post office. It had to process more than 130 million ballots for the election. President Trump attacked it, lost more than $9 billion this fiscal year. And yet in April, a study by the Pew Research Center showed that 91% of the people surveyed said they had a favorable view of the post office. And that's what we're talking about right now. Jacob, you were just mentioning that private carriers like UPS or FedEx have been able to put limits on shipments from large companies like Target or Costco, and that way they can control their quality. We also know that small sellers are offering refunds to people because people, creators on Etsy have sent things through the USPS and they're just not getting there, and they're afraid of bad reviews from customers because the packages are just stuck places across the country. And Jacob, I want to make sure that I can hear you. I'm wondering if you've heard that from the smaller sellers, or if that gives an advantage to the bigger companies, or if it really is something that's across the board a problem.
I'm really having a morning, like for some reason hitting the mute button on my phone by accident. So this is a lot of fun.
No worries. Yeah, we'll get the questions answered. What do you think right now about that, though?
Yeah, when we talk about small sellers, this is one of the many, many reasons out there why we need a functioning postal service. When we don't have a functioning postal service, we realize it. It is such an economic engine. We think about the large e-retailers that send a lot of stuff through the mail. They're important too, but these online Etsy sellers or Etsy vendors and other small businesses who rely on this time of year to make ends meet, especially in a year this challenging, if you can't get your product out, that could be catastrophic. And the online reviews are part of it. And whether people are going to come back and mm-hmm. order from you again next holiday season or you know, come into your store when hopefully things open up again. Part of that is customer service. And when you are one of these small businesses or one of these vendors, you don't have control over your shipping. And so if you want to do it in a cost-effective way and you don't want to use a private shipping carrier, which is going to be more expensive than the Postal Service, it's really out of your hands.
Carol from Randolph emailed us at ideas@wpr.org. Carol says they work for the post office in a rural part of the state and believes that this is the easiest Christmas season they've had in years because they're delivering fewer packages right now. And she attributes that to the fact that there are Amazon trucks out delivering their own packages. She also said that the sad thing is that the post office only pays for overtime work from December 5th until Christmas Day. And she could have used all of that overtime all summer and fall when she needed it. So, Jacob, when I hear the Amazon trucks, that's one piece of it, right? But the other is that there are some carriers who don't have a lot to deliver because the system can't process more to them. It's not because people are sending fewer packages. Is that right?
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes. When you started reading that email, I went, oh, I think I know what this could be. Mm. But of course, you know, obviously rural part of the state, Randolph, Wisconsin, it's hard to tell over the phone and just sure. through reading an email. But this is something I've heard from a number of postal workers, which is we are not getting the package volume that we expected. We all put in for overtime. We're not using it. We don't know why that is. And then I get a call back a couple days later. Oh, we figured out why that is. It's because the processing plant in so-and-so is so backed up that there are literally 6 or 7 foot stacks of packages all over the plant. People are pushing them out of the way to create mazes in the floor so they can walk through. And none of that is getting to us. I mean, I've had mailing industry officials and postal workers both talk to me, and we've seen news articles about it. Tractor trailers backed up miles in some cases outside postal processing facilities trying to drop off their loads because there's just no room on the shop floors to take the stuff off the trucks and put it in the post office. We have postal processing facilities that are telling folks, I cannot take your mail today. You need to go somewhere else. Because we literally have no room to put it. And so if that could be the case for Carol and Randolph, obviously we don't know just through one email, but, that would be one of my hunches.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just one person, but I'll tell you, I sent the exact same gift from an Etsy seller to two people who live 20 miles apart. And they went from the seller to the USPS on the same day. And one got there on a Thursday. And then the next Tuesday, the other one got to the other destination because that second package hung out in the St. Paul distribution center for like 4, 5, 6 days there. So there's also not necessarily consistency across the board that some places are doing better than others. I mean, I guess that's a question. Is there inconsistency?
Yeah, there's tremendous inconsistency. And you know, I've had folks, you know, in transportation and in management tell me, look, we've been getting so much mail that, and we know we have more shipments coming in that we can't process. So I'll get on the phone and start calling other processing facilities. Do you have space? Can you take this shipment and process it for me and send it back to me? There's so much variability that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I get emails from readers all the time about their postal service complaints and stories. And I don't share most of them because, you know, who wants to just keep putting complaints on Twitter? I shared one of them yesterday from a woman who sends out loaves of bread to friends and family every year. And they sounded really delicious, which is why I shared it. And some of them arrived on time. Some of them in states that are geographically closer arrived later and were beat up and bruised and moldy and gross. That is the kind of, I thought that was a really, not necessarily wonderful, but descriptive picture of the inconsistency throughout the system.
We're talking with Jacob Bogage, who's a business reporter for the Washington Post. Got another email here for you. Chris says they mailed a card to their niece in Milwaukee, which is about 30 miles from where they live, about 2 months ago. The niece never received it. And Chris is curious, what options does Chris have in trying to locate that piece of mail?
That potentially is going to be a tall task. If you're sending it, I imagine, through first class mail, which is letters and bills and greeting cards and whatnot, basically anything that can fit in a regular size envelope. Unless you specifically requested it, there's not going to be some sort of mail tracking that you can access. And so there's a very good chance, and I hate to say this, Chris and niece, that this card, if it's been 2 months, probably isn't going to arrive. The issue with all of this package volume is that it's delaying first-class mail, and I'll tell you why that is. There are only so many work hours in a day. Yes, package volume and mail volume are being processed separately, but they all end up on the back of the same mail truck, right? They all end up with the same mailman who's running out to do deliveries. Packages, in many cases, have guaranteed delivery windows, which we're seeing blown through, of course, with these delays, but they have guaranteed delivery windows. That creates an incentive for the Postal Service to need to get those things delivered first. In some cases, that means they do what's called curtailing mail, where they say this mail can go out the next day or the day after. And that is a great way for first-class mail to back up in the system and create its own backlog. And, that when there's more volume, it's easier for things to get lost or just not get delivered. I mean, I'm hearing about this, and I have a story coming out shortly about this, about small newspapers that can't get their newspapers delivered because, like we mentioned earlier, there's no room on the shop floors or there just aren't enough work hours in the day for some of these small town post offices and processing facilities to get the papers out. So this is happening. I mean, those aren't first class mail, they're periodicals, but this is happening across the board.
Yeah, certainly an evolving situation. Jacob, thanks for rolling with it and for keeping us updated amidst the chaos. We really appreciate your perspective.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
You too. Jacob Bogage is a business reporter for The Washington Post. He's written about the Postal Service, which is up against increased shipping demands, workforce stress because of COVID-19, not to mention the regular increase in packages during the holidays. Ahead on The Morning Show, we talk with an official from the Milwaukee Bucks about the team's attention to social and economic justice and its re-signing of star Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm Keely Boltina. News is next. You're listening to The Ideas Network. It's been big news for the last week. The MVP of men's professional basketball is staying in Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo re-signed with the Bucks. Let's talk about that and more as the NBA kicks off its regular season and Milwaukee plays tonight. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. And you're part of this conversation. We aren't able to take calls right now, but we are taking your emails. Use ideas at WPR.org to ask us your question or share your thoughts as we talk about the Bucks. What do you think of the team's star, Giannis? What's your level of excitement this year? Are you a longtime fan or just discovering the team? What do you want to know about the Bucks strategy? Email us at ideas@WPR.org. Try to get your questions answered and your comments incorporated into our conversation with Alex Lazry. He's the Senior Vice President of the Milwaukee Bucks. Alex, thanks for being here on the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Tonight is the Bucks' first regular season game. I recognize you are not an impartial party, but what do you hope to see?
You know, I think in today's first game, what we're hoping to just see is, see how all the new pieces fit together. I think we want to make sure that everyone gets out of the game healthy and that we just start to see a little bit more of a coming together of the team. You know, we didn't have many practices or much of a preseason. So, I think as you kind of look around the league in this opening week, the basketball at times might look a little sloppy as people and players try to, get to more familiar with each other. But, I think what you're ultimately going to see is, probably the best team we've had in the time I've been here. And I couldn't be more excited about the team. And mostly what I'm hoping for is a win tonight.
Yeah. The Bucks have earned the best record in the league each of the past 2 years, but haven't been able to get to the NBA Finals. How might this season be different?
Well, I think, one thing people, I think, need to remember is it's really hard to win a championship, and it takes time. You look at Michael Jordan or LeBron or, all of the greats. It's taken them time to get over the hump, and it's taken them time. They've had to go through adversity to get there. And, the last 2 years were really our first 2 years of championship contention. And last year being one of the most unprecedented seasons you've ever seen. So I think what we've been able to do is we've gotten experience. I think we know much more what it takes to be a championship type of team. And I think this year, with the additions of Drew Holiday, DJ Augustine, Bobby Portis, and a number of others, what you're going to see is, I think a team that's ready to take that next step. And, I think is one of the best in the NBA.
I mean, that brings us to talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo because, an incredible player and also, not a one-person team. Giannis is going to need support on that team so that the Bucks can achieve more. What can you say about trying to find the right group of people to make this successful?
Well, I think we've got that. I think when you look at guys like, Chris Middleton, who I think is one of the most underrated players in the NBA, I think he's he's played at a top 15 player in the NBA level, and he doesn't get that respect. I think when you look at Chris, the addition of Drew Holiday, who's one of the best two-way guards in the NBA, someone who can work the pick and roll and also create on his own while also guarding the other team's best player. Brook Lopez is going to continue to help anchor that defense. And then, I think our bench is going to be really, really good, with DJ Augustine, Bryn Forbes, Bobby Portis, and then, the additions of, guys like TJ Craig. It's going to be probably the best team we've had. And I think, with the additions that we made while also being able to keep Chris, Dante, and Brooke, you're going to see this team, I think, take that next step.
Yeah, and also keep Giannis Antetokounmpo, who re-signed with the team, meaning he could be playing with the Bucks for 5 more years. And that was unexpected for some people. What is the significance of this deal to this team?
Look, Giannis committing for the next 5-6 years, I think one shows, the significance that, Milwaukee is going to stay in the limelight and continue to, put itself on the front pages and be a major player over, these next 5-6 years. What Giannis brings for this city is, when I remember the first year we owned the team, we went to go play in London, and everyone was just rooting for the Knicks. Knicks weren't very good, but everyone was rooting for them. This past season we played in Paris. Everyone was rooting for the Milwaukee Bucks. I saw people wearing T-shirts, with Milwaukee on it. If I, walked around with a Milwaukee shirt, people knew where Milwaukee was and what Milwaukee was. And, that type of exposure and now international prowess is something that is going to go help Milwaukee. It helped us land the convention. It's going to help us land, even more events, and people are now going to start to see and understand Milwaukee as the top tier city in this country that it is. And so, that is something that a player like Giannis can do for a city. Once we're able to bring a championship to Milwaukee, it sky's the limit for, I think where Milwaukee can go.
What can you share about the deal making process?
I'm not going to share a ton, but what I can say is, the entire process, was about, the biggest thing that Giannis cared about was making sure that this was a team that could win. And I think asking some of the questions you asked, are the pieces that we brought in enough to take us to the next level? And everyone knows a championship is not guaranteed. There is no way to guarantee a championship. It's that hard. You need luck. You need skill, you need the ball to bounce the right way a few times. But I think what Giannis was able to see when he got back, when he was able to be with his teammates is see how good a lot of the players that we brought in are. And I think his love for the city, is not something that you can discount. He loves Milwaukee. He loves this organization. His family, this is where he's lived since he moved to the States. His family loves it here. And I think those were all factors that came into play. And, at the end of the day, the negotiation wasn't very hard, right? Like, it was us offering him Supermax and him deciding if he wanted it. And at the end of the day, he said this is where he wants to be. And, that was something that we had always felt pretty good about and obviously felt great when he signed on the dotted line.
We're talking with Alex Lazary, who's the senior vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks. They play their first game tonight, and we aren't able to take your calls this morning, but we are looking for your questions and your perspectives in email. Send us a note at ideas@wpr.org talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo. What do you think of the team star? What's your level of excitement about the Bucks this year? Maybe you've been able to go to a Bucks game. What moment of last season or seasons past do you remember when it comes to the Bucks? What do you want to see of your team? Email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's the best way to get us your question or to share your experience with us this morning as we're talking with a person from the Bucks. How important, Alex, is keeping this star player in Milwaukee when it comes to the business piece of it? Because one piece of it is the game. But that's tied a lot into economic factors here.
keeping a guy like Giannis, look, the more you win, the better it is for business, right? When we are able to have fans back in the building, it leads, you're able to sell more tickets. It creates more exposure. So retail sales and other sponsorship deals that, you might not, have otherwise been able to get, are all of a sudden on the table because you've got an international superstar that people want to be associated with and market with. And so, for us as a business, it's incredible, but more importantly for the city and state, it's incredible, just being able to, have this, a player of this magnitude and a star of this magnitude just gives the city and state so much more exposure. You're going to have people traveling from around the world to come to Milwaukee just so that they can, see Giannis. And, that's something that you can't really put a price on.
The new arena, Pfizer Forum, has spurred a lot of new development downtown. How can this franchise work to ensure that that doesn't lead to displacement or gentrification for those nearby communities?
One of the things that we wanted to make sure that we did with this development was make sure that this was something that was part of the community and was something that was going to be open and accessible to everyone. And we wanted to make sure that whatever we built in this area was either uniquely Wisconsin or unique to Wisconsin. And so I think we've been able to do that so far with the Deer District, to ensure that, we aren't seeing the kind of displacement that you talk about. What we have done is we've been a major part of a fund that has been created to help out with, some of the property tax increases that is happening. We're working with a ton of community groups. We're trying, we're working, with our foundation to ensure that we're able to, really be a stalwart of the community. Look, some of it's going to have to be a matter of public policy. Like, we don't control, property taxes or anything like that. But, our goal has always been to be as open and as part of the community as possible and work with as many partners, especially where we are, because that's our home. That's our base. And we want to make sure that everyone who's there, knows that we just want to, be part of their community and help in any way we can. So, we're working with a ton of partners on the ground to ensure that, that we're able to help in any way that we can.
Our guest is Alex Lazary with the Milwaukee Bucks. He stays with us as we talk basketball ahead of the team's first regular season game tonight. And we're going to talk about racial justice initiatives ahead. Still time for your email at ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin professional sports teams have created the Equity League. The Packers, the Brewers, and the Bucks are part of an initiative to generate investments in businesses created by Black and Latinx entrepreneurs. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. We're exploring racial and economic justice initiatives now with Senior Vice President of the Milwaukee Bucks, Alex Lazary. We're taking your questions and your perspectives at ideas@WPR.org. You can email us there wondering what your reflection is of the team's advocacy for racial justice. How would you like to see sports franchises contribute to their communities and equality? Or what are you anticipating ahead of tonight's first regular season game from the Bucks? You can email us those questions and thoughts at ideas@WPR.org. Alex, what do you hope the project, the Equity League, achieves?
Yeah, with the Equity League, our hope is that, what we're able to do is spur more investment with startups for, who are people of color and that are our social impact funds. I think some of the stats around it is, I think it's only like 1-3% of all, venture money goes to startups that are, owned by people of color. And, that's something that, just shows how difficult it is for that type of capital to be deployed to these communities, and that type of inequity is something that we're hoping that, you know, we can shine a little bit of light on, and hopefully play our part in leveling that playing field, and then, you know, also helping with, you know, social impact firms that and startups that are looking to make a difference. So, you know, this is not going to be a silver bullet for anything, but I think what we were really hoping for was, you know, what was something that we could do now that would have an impact, and that, you know, that would have some real change, because I think a lot of the change that we need is going to take some time, and we know that. And so what were some of the concrete things we could do now that we thought could have a measurable impact? And the Equity League, you know, being able to team up with the Brewers and Packers and use our, you know, our combined heft to bring some spotlight on this issue while also bringing some capital to us was really important.
Sports Illustrated gave the Bucks the 2020 Team of the Year Award for their work promoting racial justice. What do you know about the importance of these initiatives like the Equity League for the players?
No, I think we were honored to, you know, to be given, you know, the Team of the Year. You know, usually that goes to a team that, you know, that won the championship. And I think what we were able to show was, some things are bigger than sports, and more important than sports. And, you know, the work around, you know, social and racial justice, while, you know, I'm so proud of what we were able to do, you know, we were not alone in that. You know, I think we helped do some really important things. But, you know, the NBA, the Players Association, you look at like what LeBron was able to, you know, to accomplish with More Than a Vote. There were a lot of people that did a lot of really incredible things when it came to social and racial justice. You know, what I think the Equity League can help bring, you know, and what I think it means to the players is it's just another show of commitment, you know, from the organization on, you know, on stuff that is real and concrete, and putting our money where our mouth is. You know, there's a lot we can do. You know, boycotting a game is incredible, and it does bring a ton of national spotlight on something. But the flip side of that is, you know, what can we do with our resources also right now, to make sure that we're having a measurable impact? And, you know, hopefully this Equity League, is going to be able to do that and, have an effect, you know, in the near term as we continue to work with all our partners and, you know, people around the country to ensure that we also have the long-term, change that we're looking for.
Alex Lazary is the Senior Vice President of the Milwaukee Bucks, and we're talking about racial justice and basketball here on The Morning Show, taking your emails at ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, Alex, some of the actions do draw some criticism, I guess. I mean, here's an email from Matt in Wausau who says, "It's a shame our most segregated city has the money to give a basketball player $50 million. And Matt is concerned that society has mixed up goals. I mean, there's a business aspect to this, Matt. And then there's also this social justice work. Help us understand how those coexist for you."
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I would say that the city didn't give Giannis right. Any money, right? Like that was the Milwaukee Bucks, and you know that's driven by, sports is a very big business, and you know there are a ton of people that that are in it. And look, I think what's interesting about sports is, it's something that I think goes beyond just, you know, the money that's given to the players. And the players make a lot of money and they do a lot of good with that money too. Let's not forget like all the stuff that Giannis, and all of our players have done in the community. You know, Fiserv Forum has been a huge source of pride and I think impact for Milwaukee. You just kind of look at all of the events and money that it was able to bring to the city, it's kind of short lifespan. But that's also why, like, I don't disagree. And I think a lot of people agree that, that with that, you know, sports does have an obscene amount of money in it. And That's why we've always tried to set an example of being a great corporate citizen. You know, you look at what Giannis, Chris, and some of our players did at the beginning of this pandemic in leading the way to ensuring that we created a fund for our workers who weren't going to be able to work at Fiserv Forum anymore. You know, for everything that's happened in the arena, we've tried to make sure that anyone who works there is treated right and gets paid a fair and living wage. You know, we signed a deal with our labor union to, you know, pay $15 an hour as a minimum wage in the arena. You know, we give people the right to organize and form a union. And so, you know, I think what we've been trying to do is set an example that you can be a good corporate citizen and have that be good business. And, you know, that's something we've been trying to do. And, you know, again, and I think it's borne fruit. You know, we were able to bring the largest convention that you could ever get in the Democratic National Convention, you know, to come to Milwaukee, which shined even greater light on the city. So, you know, I don't disagree that, you know, the players and sports and everything, it's, you know, there's big money involved. But I also think we have to look at, you know, the impact that it brings, that I think goes beyond just the basketball court. And what it can do for a city and bringing resources to it. And, you know, if all that doesn't do it, don't forget about the income taxes that Giannis is going to have to pay on that money.
Fair. And Alex, I mean, you brought it here. You served as the finance chair for the Milwaukee Host Committee for the Democratic National Convention. Pandemic happened. The convention didn't bring the people or the big economic boost Milwaukee was hoping for. Do you think we'll get a do-over?
I'm not sure about that. I think it's too early to know. But what I do know is, what happened, you know, with the convention, while we didn't get the $200 million of economic impact, we can't, I think, discount the impact that had just by having the convention awarded to us. You know, I don't think there's anyone who was more disappointed than I was that the convention wasn't able to, you know, to happen. And, you know, I remember over those 4 days how perfect those days were in Milwaukee and how sad I was that people weren't there to enjoy it. But what it also did was it elevated us. And what it hopefully showed us as a community is when we go up against cities like Houston and Miami, we can beat them. And Houston and Miami are, you know, big convention cities. They host Super Bowls and Final Fours. And we went up against them and we won. And we were awarded the biggest convention because they thought, okay, Milwaukee would best be able to handle it. And that's something that I think we need to take to heart and continue to go big when we're, you know, trying to think about, you know, where Milwaukee can go and what, you know, Milwaukee can do.
Right. And at this point, I'm not sure if you're talking about the DNC or the Bucks anymore because of those cities and everything. Alex,
it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for your time this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Alex Lazary is the Senior Vice President of the Milwaukee Bucks. Just ahead, we're talking with NPR's Patty Hirsch about all things economics. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.